Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also stream us if you go to www.guardiantalkradio.com. You can download the app and take us with you on the move. And you can also go to our Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/NAGblankcanvas. That's N-A-G blank canvas. So first of all, nice to be back. Thank you, Corinne Lankin, our education officer, for filling in for me for the last 2 weeks. I expect many of you have been wondering where I was these last 2 weeks. Everyone thinks I'm on vacation whenever I'm not here. That's just as far from the truth as it could ever be. I was invited, amongst with many other people, to represent the Bahamas. I'm part of a Bahamian delegation to Santiago de Cuba, which is a very southern city on the southern side, obviously, of Cuba, and quite far from Havana, pretty much on the other side of the very large island. And I was honored to be selected amongst 300 other Bahamians who all went to represent the Bahamas in this festival. It's called the Fiesta del Fuego. And there's sort of a carnival, and there's an art segment, and all different things. And every year there's an invited country who is the special honoree, and this year it was the Bahamas. So we were invited in September of last year, and we all went out. When was it finally? I have in the studio, we're going to have two guests today. Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett from College of the Bahamas, who represented the literary and intellectual field, and Ms. Linda Stubbs, who's with me right now. Dr. Bethel Bennett's going to join us later, who has a business, The Decorator's Den, and she was there to actually dress all of the different venues which the Bahamas was involved in. So it was a very large endeavor. I would imagine it cost quite a large amount of money. We went for, I think in the end, 10 days. We were supposed to be there for longer. There should have been an advance team and then a second advance team. And then finally, the performers were supposed to come out. But due to various logistical issues, we pretty much all got there sort of a day after we were supposed to start. And it was pretty chaotic, I have to say. So I've got Linda Stubbs right now in the studio with me. And as I said, she was responsible for decorating all of the venues. So Linda, why don't you talk a little bit about how you first were sort of introduced to the whole concept? And actually, when were you invited to join the team?
Good morning, everyone. Amanda, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming.
Well, we have a whole lot to tell.
I know, we do. We have a lot to tell. So without being mean, let's be as honest as we can.
Yes. I think I was contacted in early May.
In early May. Okay, so let me just reiterate that the invitation originally came to the Ministry of Youth, Sport and Culture in September of 2014. So you were invited to join in May of 2015 when the festival was taking place on July 3rd. So that enough time for you?
Well, as a designer, Amanda, and someone who absolutely loves what I do, mm-hmm. I can throw myself into a situation and make good on it.
Yes, which you did, I have to say.
In no time at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, May to me was a good time for me. Mm-hmm. It was okay. Mm-hmm. It was fine. Mm-hmm. I was a part of the advanced team that went down in May to have a look at the facilities and what had to be done to bring the event to the level that we would have liked it to be. So when down there, we visited many venues, and it was up to my creativity from then until we got there just a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it was a bit of a challenge when we finally got back to Nassau, and it was time to really get mobilized. It was a huge challenge. Mm. So to say that this was in the making from September of last year, it's surprising to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was surprising. I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised. I think, first of all, we have to say, in the end, we made it happen. We all did. So there were many people there. I can't list every single person, but, you know, the National Performing Arts Group were there with Jerrica Delavaux-Grant. There was a Junkanoo group there under Anthony Brian McKinney, Adderley. Brian Adderley, yes. Various people. Kareem Mortimer did a film program. Javotte Bethel did a fashion program. There were lots of different elements to this. The NAGB was in charge of the art program. Yes. And I think we have to say that everyone knocked it out of the park, given the conditions
we
all had to work in.
You know, that is the thing I feel, that national pride that most Bahamians have. Those that that truly love our country and love who we are, no matter what, and especially me, when it comes to representing the government of the Bahamas, I give 110% every time.
I think you're underestimating yourself. I think you gave about 250%. I don't think Linda slept for about 3 days.
No, we did not. We went without sleep, Amanda, literally. Because rather than getting there on the 19th,
right,
as a part of the advanced team to set up, we all came, the entire contingent.
On the 3rd, wasn't it, in the end?
No, I think we got there on the 2nd.
The 2nd, on the 2nd of July.
Because the official opening
was the 3rd.
Was going to be the 3rd. So we literally lost almost a week of work.
Yeah, and we arrived the day before it was supposed to open.
Exactly.
And just to give the listeners a sort of idea, you had how many, in the end you decorated really sort of head to toe about 5 or 6 locations, but we were given the opportunity to perform in about 40.
Right.
I think when you went on that trip, you saw a whole host of locations.
Absolutely. But it was not humanly possible to achieve that particular goal of decorating all of those venues because... And then, the truth be told, Amanda, they were not like the main hub of activities.
Yeah, true.
They were just little areas that, you know, we would have done some things in. But I think at the end of the day, because when you even think about Casa Caribe, we were supposed to have decorated Casa Caribe, but it took on a different form.
Yep.
And no one wanted, none of the Bahamian directors wanted to set up a Casa Caribe because it was just a floodgate of people all day long.
Yeah.
And they could not perform their tasks, their various tasks there. So Bahamas House, as we refer to it, became our hub.
Yeah, so we were given for the week we were there a beautiful old historic home, which is sort of functions almost like an antiquities museum in a way. It's a very beautiful private home that's been preserved. Correct. And we were given that for the week, and it became Bahama House. It became your house, Linda.
It became my house.
So why don't you talk a little about what went on there in that week? Because it really started at 10 o'clock in the morning and went till 2 a.m. every day.
Correct. 2 a.m. the next day.
2 a.m., that's true.
Well, Bahamas House was, as I said, it was like Bahamas Central. And we wanted it to be so outstanding that anybody passing by knew that was it. This was Bahamas House. So... And you know, Amanda, what is so interesting, we can backtrack to our preparations to go to Cuba. While there on our mission in May, we discovered that there in Santiago, you could find little to nothing to work with.
I think probably everywhere in Cuba, but I think Santiago is, as I remember when we all got together for a sort of pre-meeting with the artistic director, who was Ian Poitier. And he said, you know, forget Havana if you've even been there. Santiago is even more. So, I mean, even Havana is quite complicated to get things, but in Santiago it was very challenging. I wasn't on that. I was supposed to go on that May delegation. I couldn't. It conflicted with my schedule. I was supposed to send somebody from NAGB. Her passport was stolen 2 days before she went. Mine was then stolen a month later, so I don't know what kind of weird karma we have at the NHEB right now. But so we actually, none of us had been down there.
Correct.
And we were warned, but I have to say, until I got there, I didn't realize really how bad it was. So I remember at the art gallery asking if I could go buy a roll of tape, and they all fell about laughing, like, you know, like I'd asked them to go score me a kilo of drugs or something. I mean, they were just, you know... Tape! You want tape! And it was really, I think, it's very hard for people. And it's one of the reasons I'm appreciative I went. It was I'll be honest, one of the hardest trips I've ever been on in terms of organization and exhaustion level. And I've done a lot of really very complicated things in my life. But I think until you've been there, you don't realize how little the Cubans live.
Well, you know, Amanda, and I think
so. You had to bring everything.
Yeah, we literally had to take everything. As a matter of fact, in May, I've asked, where's your hardware? First of all, they didn't know what that meant. So I said, like a hardware store where you can buy screws and nails and things like that. And they took me like literally to a hole in the wall where a guy had like five of one screw and maybe three of another and some fittings for PVC. It was just amazing. Okay,
yep.
I said,
yep.
Is this it? This is it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do you build houses here? What do you use? How do you achieve things? But it is so amazing that we take so much as Bahamians for granted.
Yes, we really do.
When we have persons that are so close to us.
Mm-hmm.
By jet, it was what, 48 minutes?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
48. It's like going to another family island.
And one thing I realized, too, was that there was very little garbage in the streets. And I think that is almost not just a result of that they have a lot of people cleaning, but also they really throw nothing away. I mean, if they had a styrofoam, you know, dinner box, they would probably rinse it out and keep
reuse it.
You know, so things
over and over again.
Over and over. Things are not discarded. Things are not thrown cavalierly out of car windows.
Well, you know, too, we took water, drinking water, because their water is a bit hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of those plastic bottles, those, what is it, Chelsea's Choice and Aquapure water bottles, especially the gallon bottles.
Yeah.
They were blown away to see those.
Yeah, yeah.
And thought of the many uses that they can, you know, utilize those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like prized possessions. And I'm like, really?
I know. Well, that's what I said. It's one of the reasons I'm grateful. And I actually took my children along.
Right.
And I'm very grateful they had the opportunity to see that as well. And
absolutely.
I think it really shifted. You know, it shifted a lot. Like at home already now, we think really twice about throwing things away and how we can change the lifestyle to be less disposable, less of a disposable kind of a people.
But you know too, Amanda, I also feel that it's a sense of pride.
Mm-hmm.
They are very poor, but seemingly happy people.
Oh yes, very much
so. They're content.
Yep.
They took on, they gave that portion of scripture where it says, whatever situation you find yourself in life, be content.
Mm-hmm.
They gave fresh new meaning to that.
Yep, it's true.
And they are seemingly content.
Yeah. And within that, we had to do our normal jobs in which we all, both of us, I mean, for me to put on an art show, I think a lot of people don't realize how much goes into putting on an art show. But, you know, normally we repaint, we replaster, we, you know, we make a lot of these decals that we stick on the wall to explain the story of what's happening in the art show. We weren't allowed to do that because we couldn't use anything sticky on their walls because they only repaint every 5 to 10 years.
Amazing.
We repaint the National Art Gallery in between every single exhibition because, you know, we choose new colors for the walls to, because, you know, that's part of the storytelling. Oh, this
Correct.
Painting looks good on a dark, on a gray wall. This painting looks good on a yellow wall. And you try to design the exhibition in such a way that it draws you through with the color and with the text. We couldn't do that. And we couldn't change halfway through and go buy something else because there was nothing to buy. So.
No. And, you know, when we went down, Bahamas House needed a fresh coat of paint.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, are you guys going to be bringing the paint?
Really? We actually got a list from the museum of the things we should bring with us. And that included 5 gallons of paint, paint brushes, light bulbs.
Yes.
There were very few light bulbs. We all had to share. We had to take some out of our place and loan
That's
them
right.
to the next place.
Exactly.
It was quite something. So I'd love to hear about how you managed to actually do your decorating under those conditions.
Sure.
We have to quickly go to a short break and then we'll come back right after and you can tell about the sort of three major locations, which were the theater, Bahama House,
mm-hmm.
and actually the art gallery.
Correct.
And how you managed to do that and how your team functioned actually out there. So we'll be right back after the short break. I have Linda Stubbs with me, who has the Decorator's Den and was part of the Bahamian delegation to Santiago de Cuba in July for the Fiesta del Fuego. And we'll speak a little bit more about the festival and why we thought we should go and what we achieved while we were there. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also stream us at www.guardianradio.com. And we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Tonight, I'm talking a little bit about a trip that I was on for 10 days, which was a huge Bahamian delegation to Santiago de Cuba to participate in a very large-scale sort of festival of culture. It's a sort of pan-Caribbean appreciation moment where there are different activities from all different Caribbean nations, but every year they focus on one specific nation, and this year it was the Bahamas. I went down along with a lot of other heads of departments to do various things, film program, lecture program, fashion show, Junkanoo Rush Out, an art show, and one of the people that was very key to the team is sitting with me in the studio this evening. It's Linda Stubbs, who owns the Decorator's Den, and she was responsible for bringing the flair of the Bahamas to each location where we had to do an activity. So she had to really give the sense that you were entering into a Bahamian art space, or sorry, I say art space, I'm thinking about the gallery that I did, but a Bahamian space for anything. So Linda, how did you manage to do that? And how did you do it working with, as we spoke about in the last segment, the very, very difficult circumstances we were under, both in terms of the lateness. So in fact, you were supposed to leave on the 19th. I was supposed to leave on the 26th. And we actually all arrived on the 2nd. I had one day to install the art show, which is unheard of. Somehow we managed, as you did. Mm-hmm. How did you make that work?
You know, Amanda, after the first segment, I thought about it and I said, you know, Santiago is a blank canvas.
You know what? It's true. It's really true.
And the beauty about it is we were able to go and with that blank canvas, paint the picture for the people that we wanted them to know about the Bahamas, and which was overwhelmingly received by everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. But the journey to that was challenging. It was daunting. It was frustrating. And
yeah, it was. I have to say, at a certain point, we stopped going through the lobby of the hotel because, I'm not saying anything against it, but it was such a negative space because everyone was under so much pressure.
Right.
Everyone felt so hard done by that they'd all been flown in. I mean, the Junkanoo team and the dancers, for example, they arrived the day after us. They arrived on the 3rd of July at, I think, 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were all expected to perform the next day at 5 p.m. in 41 degree heat.
Correct.
Which, you know, as a performer, feels very disrespectful.
41?
It was 41 degrees. It was, yeah, I mean, it was 41 Celsius, which is, yeah,
okay,
which is something crazy. It was so hot. And I think so, it was a difficult space mentally for all of us and physically. How did you get your team through that? Do you just work with awesome people, or as a team leader, did you find you had to spend a lot of your energy in kind of keeping the, you know, keeping that positivity in action?
Well, you know, Amanda, and I will say, apart from the fact that I'm basically a very driven kind of person, I feel that my involvement in Junkanoo for the past 40 years of my life has added this sort of tenacity. With Junkanoo, you have to produce elaborate costumes to go to Bay Street. And a lot of times everybody works. They have a normal life.
Yes.
But you have to find time to do this and be ready for December 25th.
Yes. And not just be ready, but like come with a certain energy too.
Absolutely. And you know what? I credit Junkanoo for a lot of who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
The discipline of, okay, failure is not an option. Sleep is a privilege mm-hmm. when it comes to time to deliver.
Right.
Okay. So that is essentially what happened with my team and I,
mm-hmm.
who comprises primarily of Junkanoo persons.
Yeah.
There was only three persons in the group that were not grounded in Junkanoo, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've worked together over the years and decorating for independence, and you know, I've never had the luxury, Amanda, in anything that I've ever done for the government in terms of decorating or whatever, I've never had the luxury of time.
Yeah,
I've never had the luxury of a lot of mm-hmm. lead time.
Yeah.
But what I've come to understand is don't wait for them
mm-hmm.
to provide you that time.
Yeah.
You know what's happening. You know what's coming up. Prepare yourself.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said to me years ago, Linda, there's nothing like when opportunity meets preparation.
Yeah.
So you have to prepare for them.
Sure. Yeah.
And I've come to learn and appreciate that. So you know what, Amanda? Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me anymore.
Didn't throw you.
I'm ready. Whenever mm-hmm. they're ready, mm-hmm. I'm ready. They mm-hmm. just need to call, and I position myself to be able to deliver.
Yeah, I always say, like, I've tried to make, and actually I have to say, I think we've achieved after 3.5 years of working together. I always told my staff I wanted us to be like ninjas. You know, that when we got the go, it was just like, and I feel that we achieved that there too.
But it is
a lot of preparation.
We did. Yeah. And despite all, Amanda, you know, what took me over to get to Santiago was, while we weren't mobilized until 24 hours out,
mm-hmm.
I was in the position, thank goodness, to be able to purchase all that we needed in advance of the time. Because, you know, we had to take flagpoles, so we had to use PVC pipes.
Yeah.
Because it was the lightest kind of thing, material.
The lightest
you
kind
can
of thing
use.
You create a flagpole.
Correct.
Out of, yeah.
So we had to take tents. To mm-hmm. ask for a tent in Santiago is like, what?
Are no, even kidding? Trying to find a truck to transport
exactly.
something was
it
really...
It was a problem.
Yeah.
So we took tents, we took tables, we took chairs, we took lumber,
mm-hmm.
we took paint, screws, nails, heavy equipment, mm-hmm. ladders. We took everything to Santiago.
And in fact, cargo is probably one of the key issues getting there.
Yes.
That was actually one of the biggest.
That was the most daunting.
And we have to definitely mention
task.
Ronald Sims, who
yes.
was the person in charge of cargo. And I don't know how he kept his cool. He's my, you know, I have to say, I just want to grow up to be like him.
Well, I just want to say to Ronald, right, my buddy, I just love traveling with Ronald. He was on that May trip and it was just so much fun. But I will tell you, we make fun out of stress and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will just tell a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, the person that took me mentally through this experience in Santiago was Darren Turnquest,
yes, the director of youth.
My God, he was so hilarious.
Yeah, he was hilarious, and he's got a really great energy. And I think that was something that I have to say, like, you know, it was overall, you know, I wouldn't say fun, but it was definitely a really interesting experience. But the thing that I really, because, you know, the reason I took my girls with me was because I didn't want to be away for 2 weeks, not being able to. There was no communications, there was no Wi-Fi, there was nothing. For me, at the end of my day, if I see their faces, that's my stress relief right there, because they're like two little.
And they had a good time.
They had a good time. And we, like you said, we as a family always try to turn everything into an opportunity and into fun. And the last day we sat there and we said, okay, like, everyone's been, this was wrong and that was wrong. And let's talk about what came out of this. And one of the things was, in fact, meeting all the different people on the different teams.
Yes.
Seeing people out of their natural, because we all sort of, in a way, we all have to wear masks in our jobs, right?
Yes.
You know, we're expected to be a certain way and mm-hmm. we show up and, you know, and that was taking everyone out of their context and putting people under that kind of stress. You actually really see people's true nature.
And listen, when you talk about stress, Amanda.
Yeah.
Bonnie Roll.
Oh my gosh.
And Charity Amrista.
I don't know how they did it.
The government owes them a year's salary for the stress they went through. Those women took some verbal abuse, almost The only thing they would escape was physical abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were abused physically because they couldn't sleep.
Yeah, I know.
They were responsible for people like me who cried every day because for 3 days I had no luggage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had no clothes.
Now, there were a lot of tears on that trip.
Oh, my God.
I know, I cried and my team cried and there were lots of tears. But the positive aspect, like I said, was meeting so many Bahamians of different stripes, from different, you know, the different groups and different, and seeing all this, in fact, positive energy.
Yes.
And this kind of idea that, okay, we're all in this big word I can't say on the radio together, this yes. pool of something nasty together. How can we make that work? And actually, one of the things that for me was a real bonding experience was the first Junkanoo rush out. Okay. And we all did that together. And, you know, okay. I'm not part of a group here. I mean, I have my heart belongs to one particular.
But let me correct you. We all were not there because not my all, team that, had
true.
No
they
luxuries.
Working. That's true. That's true. But
my team had no luxuries. But I heard it was a great
but
rush.
You were in the second rush. But that first yes. one, it was a way for the people that were able to go to get a lot of kind of
y'all
energy
got a release.
Out. Yeah, exactly. It was like a catharsis.
Yes.
It really was. And it was interesting because, of course, you know, it makes you think about the root of what Junkanoo really is.
Right.
Right? Which is a kind of social...
But that is what Junkanoo is, yep. Amanda. It brings people together on every strata, every level, no matter who you are in life, to hear that music and to come together. Junkanoo is a healer. I don't care what anybody says. It just... You can be on the side of a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian, a chief, whoever, but when you hit the road, you're all on the same
yep,
level.
It's true. It's true.
And that is what Junkanoo does. Yep. And that is the thing that keeps this country together, I feel, socially as well as culturally.
Yeah. And that actually kind of brings me to what I'd like to talk about in the next segment a bit more, which is the point of these festivals. So we recently, you made an interesting comment the last time we were together. About how, because when I got to rush at that first, there were two rush outs. One was not in costume,
right.
And it was kind of almost, it wasn't a trial run because it was in the streets with the other countries. There were 23 other countries there. There was, you know, all the people from the city were watching again. But it was kind of a bit like a trial one. And we all just right. went out in regular clothes, but in colors, wearing mm-hmm. sort of, you know, just the flag colors. And it made me think about perhaps what the idea behind Carnival had been, which was mm-hmm. to allow the general population mm-hmm. to have that experience, which you can't anymore. So when I was a kid, when I was 5 and 6 and 10 years old, you could sort of join in Junkanoo. You could be on the side of the road and there weren't the barriers and you could sort of, you know, along the sidewalk kind of rush along a little bit. You can't do that anymore. And yeah. I think that's what's missing somehow. And you made an interesting comment about how Cuba was such a poor country and was not able to put a lot of dollars into that. Like, we all came with our own material. We all paid for hotels. And you mentioned how that was quite an interesting model, that there were these 23 countries there. We were the largest delegation, so there weren't 300 from each country, but there were many, many people. And all that money that came in and all those beds and heads. And, you know, you sort of commented on that and whether that was the sort of model we should try to follow somehow.
Correct.
And I thought that was quite an interesting observation.
Yes, Amanda. And, you know, when I contrast this festival with the Bahamas Junkanoo Carnival, to me, it guarantees the heads and the beds.
Yeah.
In advance.
Yeah.
Okay? Because this festival was being planned a year.
Yeah.
In advance, almost, from yep. September, you said.
And people were sort of officially invited.
And people were yeah. officially invited, mm. and they responded and came. So this idea about honoring a country, we have people from all over the world that has been visiting the Bahamas from eons or for eons. And so, therefore, to invite them or to honor a country will not be out, you know, uncharacteristic. Mm-hmm. It is something that we can very easily adapt. And people will feel a sense of, oh, they appreciate us so much. They want us to bring our culture to them and mix and blend and watch other people or have others watch us as we put on our yeah. culture. So therefore, Amanda, I feel it's a better model than Carnival. I, you know, and if we were to, I guess we're so prideful, though, we won't let people spend as much money as we had to spend to go to Santiago.
Yeah, but also I think it's interesting. I think it was a really interesting model, but I really wonder because we have this slightly xenophobic character to our national makeup that, you know, we don't always want to hear someone else's music, someone else, you know, we're really like, what about ours? What about ours?
But Amanda, we've never had that opportunity, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, look at the success of the food festival that is held here. I mean, thousands of people go down there over the course of the weekend to try the food. What if they brought their culture, their drums, their whatever instruments they use as, you know, to put on their native festival?
Yeah.
It will be just as beautiful and even more successful, which is why when I ran into Janet Johnson, I thought she should be in Santiago to begin to add to the food festival a bit of the culture.
I believe
aspect.
I know she was on vacation, but she showed up, and I think she's beginning to think about how we can do that. So we have to go to another quick break, and then at the end of this break, we're going to be joined as well by Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett in the studio. I'm currently speaking with Linda Stubbs about this very large Bahamian delegation that we all went on to Santiago, Cuba. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show where we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery. And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to carry on with our conversation about the delegation to Santiago de Cuba for the Fiesta del Fuego. We're also joined now in the studio with Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, whose title I didn't have written out, but you're the Dean of Liberal Arts at COB, basically, or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. And you were in charge of sort of the intellectual programming. And Linda, we've been talking about, you know, the challenges involved. I mean, not just the lateness, but also the country itself and the difficult in getting materials. And I think we, you know, at the last segment, we touched a little bit on, you know, this idea of festivals. So I think what I'd like to talk about in that last 20 minutes is some of the questions I sent you before, which was like, what are these festivals worthwhile? You know, for us to go as visitors, should we do that? Should we concentrate on rather creating that model here, as Linda suggested? And what are the aim of them? What do you felt we achieved as the Bahamas in Cuba? And for your particular field, do you think it was something that was of value? So why don't you hop in, Tony? Tony, who's also Ian, who's also Tony. So just don't get confused, listeners. Sorry, Ian. Ian / Tony.
I think that we actually really need to change the way ministries work in order for anything in this country to work, because ministries have become petty minefields of jealousy, and this is not going to sound good, of just bureaucratic ways to stop things from happening. And that's sad, because no model is going to function without a complete change in the governance structure.
I mean, what Linda said before you joined us was that, you know, she's worked so long now with the government that she's realized that whenever she hears about something that might happen, she basically has to completely coordinate herself to be ready for the fact that it's going to be very last minute. And I admire what everyone achieved, frankly, because like I said, everyone that went on that delegation, more or less, we all stayed up 48 hours without sleeping to put our best foot forward. But that's now somehow what you expect is a little bit sad, you know.
It is.
Because, you know, people always, they call me up and they say, oh, can I do something in the NAGB in 3 months? And I say, listen, we have our exhibitions planned 2 years in advance. Wow. Because that's actually how you should do it.
Right.
You know, and like I said, I just shipped all this artwork to Vienna for a big Bahamian art show we're having there. That show's in the middle of September. And the artwork is already gone, and it's the middle of July. And that's how you do it, because that's the safe way to transport art is by sea. The safe way to do it is in a crate. There's certain standards, and you know as a professional what you need to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should be. So Tony's really speaking to this.
And I like his point. I would love to hear your heart, Tony, on this.
Yeah, so continue. I just wanted to touch back on that.
But yeah, the model if we go with a festival model, which I think will be hugely successful, it has to be almost run like a business, and the government does not run like a business. They run like a they run government as if it were a bunch of cousins fighting with one another, and that can't work.
And I think in any country, just to defend the government slightly, could be, I mean, even though I agree, one, they did actually support a cultural thing, which I'm very pleased for, so I have to thank them for that. The second thing is, I think in any government, because I have a cousin who, my husband, who works for a museum in Germany, and it's government in general is slow. In any country, it is slow. I think here we have other problems, this familial relationship and things like that, which make it worse. But I think in general, we can agree that government, private sector, runs things better than any government ever will.
But the problem with that is that then we say that, you know, festivals can't come under the government, and it divorces government from any responsibility.
Right, sure, no, and that's the problem, right? That's the problem right there, is how do we move forward? How do we move forward in a sort of, that we run things as though it were the private sector, which is deadlines, pre-planning, transparency, all those things, but still work hand in hand with the government, which should, of course, be involved in culture and...
I mean, I look at something like the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh or the Avignon Festival, and those things work. I mean, and they are incredible spaces for intellectual and cultural exchanges. Mm-hmm. Why can't that happen here? I mean, Santiago is on a smaller scale, but it's still huge.
Look at the theater, for example.
The theater.
2,500 people.
Yes.
Okay, and we are so much richer. But we have nothing like it.
Yes. Well, they're very rich culturally. And they are. And they put their, in a way, what little money they have, they put it where their mouth
is. I've coined a phrase. I said, you know, Castro, they kept them poor and happy. Yes. They entertained them and they made them smile.
Panem, what did they say? Yeah. Under Julia, in the Roman Empire, bread and games. Bread and games.
Yeah. Wow. But that theater has a backstage as well.
Yeah.
And it has wings and things can happen.
Which we don't have here.
We don't have that here.
Not even close.
Yeah.
They try to use the Shirley Street Theater for those purposes, but it's not intended to be.
It was a movie. I mean, we all remember when it was the Shirley Street Twin, right? It was a movie theater. It was never built to be.
It cannot happen. Mm-hmm. We need a theater. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, we cannot talk about cultural industries, which is something that the government is starting to talk about now, and really not put in investment into cultural industries.
Correct.
In order to get cultural industries to take off, like festivals or even carnival if they want that, you have to create an infrastructure where things will flow. And yes, Cuba had some serious problems with infrastructural inadequacies, but that festival came off.
That was successful, and they've been doing it for 35 years. Imagine that.
I know.
And you have this influx of people coming to your country every year.
I know. And
year.
I met some people. I didn't even know Bonaire was a country. They were in our hotel.
That's
and
right.
It was, you know, and I met quite a few people from the delegation, not as many as I would have liked, because to also like spread the blame around while we were beyond disorganized on our end, not we, us sitting in this room, but the way it kind of panned out that we got there and all the rest. On the other end, it was also not easy to get information because, you know, I expected that as a delegate, you know, we had our little ID badges. I thought, you know, we'd get a daily program from the festival organizer, not from our team, but from the people organizing that fiesta. Like, this is where the Haitian dinner is happening and this is where the Aruban whatever is happening. And really, it was a lot of self-motivation. We'd all meet in the lobby and say, what's happening today? I don't know. Where have you got to be? I'm not sure. And we'd ask around and we'd find things out.
You know, a part of the frustration for the organizers there was that we were so late.
Yes.
And they thought we were actually going to bail on them at the last minute.
And from what I've heard, it almost caused an international incident because it was also a diplomatic mission to a certain degree, right? Yes. There was a cultural agreement that was being signed between the Bahamas and Cuba with Cuba about to open up. It was very much a sort of sign of our friendship, and that we arrived the day before it started was bad.
And it just shows how slow we are as a country to really take advantage of these opportunities, or how reticent we are to move beyond what is comfortable. We always talk about the United States. Well, there's a whole world out there outside of the United States.
Absolutely.
Yes, the U.S. is important to us, and yes, they are an essential partner, mm-hmm. but there are other countries.
And that's what I appreciated about this festival in particular. Yeah. And I think Cara Festa tried to, but we all know that also fails miserably every time it happens. It's next time it's happening is in August, and we only just got invited a month ago. So, which again, it's impossible. Okay. It's impossible to do a good job in 1 month. But this idea of connecting with the other countries is something I appreciated from being there, the other countries from this region.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I think what we need to do is realize that we have strength in numbers. And while I'm so proud to be Bahamian, I also acknowledge that there's other countries in this region that share our history, that I probably have family I don't know about living on some other islands that we all do, and that we need to start being more sort of embracing of our neighbors.
But you know, I'll tell you something, I may get into trouble for this, but I just have to say it. What I got from all of this is that something as important as culture is not fueled sufficiently
it's not where it is
at this time.
It's not.
It occurs to me that culture needs to come under tourism
because
they work together. You know, if you have tourism, you have culture.
Or they should work together.
They should be working together.
Referring back to what Tony mentioned, which is these sort of petty rivalries, or let's just say rivalries, maybe they're not petty, that you could see that there was problems with those different areas working together. And, you know, I don't know if that's historical. I don't know if that's because we all know that tourism has the largest budget, that their budget is fairly free. They get to decide how they spend it without too much back and forth. Whereas all the other, you know, in youth, sport, and culture, you know, if you want to get on a plane, it takes about 6 months to get the permission. And by the time you get the permission, the plane ticket's tripled in price. And then you can't go because you end up paying out of your pocket. And then it takes 3 years to get paid back.
Yeah.
And there's all these problems. So I think there's also a lot of sort of envy, possibly, that, you know, oh, for us, everything's so difficult. And for you guys, you know, there's always that grass being greener on the other side of the fence thing.
But I also think our mindset has to change, because we have to stop thinking of people who are going to represent the country as going on a holiday,
going on
a trip. And COB suffers from that. As soon as you're going to a conference, you're going to present a paper, you're going to do something like that, you're going on a trip.
Well, again, envy. I would say it comes down to envy.
Our trip in Santiago was
the furthest
from a holiday.
I know. It was.
We got our butts kicked.
Oh, we did. Yes. We all came back wrecked.
But you know something? At the end of the day, when the police had to pepper spray people because they all wanted to fight to get in there, when I did the draping of the exterior of the buildings and the interior decorating.
Oh, and the lights
and
that
the
you
lights
had. And the,
and
oh,
the
it was
music.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was
incredible.
Drove
those people crazy.
No, we had crowds trying to get into Bahama House.
I mean, like thousands every night. Yeah. And they had to bring extra police reinforcement.
Yeah.
To control the crowd. And when I was decorating the fence, draping it, slagging it, I was told, don't do that, they're gonna steal it. Well, the first night they didn't steal it, so I figured we're okay. The second evening,
gone.
It was gone. You know, and the people needed that for curtains for their home, for clothing, is what I was told.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, and I can tell the government of the Bahamas, we represented them
we blew those people away we did
and like they said, they've never seen it before.
It's true.
It was overwhelmingly successful.
And same
and
same for the Junkanoo Rush Out, both of them. I mean, you know,
every aspect of it.
Every aspect. Yeah.
Look at that that show at the theater. Oh my god, it was phenomenal.
It was.
And poor Ian, I don't know how he does it, but I lift him up. I got to keep him in prayer.
Ian Poitier, who was artistic director.
Was,
he
fabulous.
Did an awesome job.
Yeah. Man, that production was like, it looked as if he had them rehearsing for a year.
I know.
And they rehearsed, what, a day and a half?
I think 2 days.
2 days of rehearsals. Yep. And Ian made that look as though those kids, or the adults, were doing that for a year. It was
well, there were kids and adults. And I think, you know, again, kudos has to go out to Chris Justillian, who was the musical director, and Jerica Delavaux Grant and the Amenji Circus. Because, like you said, everyone came prepared. Like, we all had our collective stuff together.
Yes.
So that when we got put on the ground, we just hit it beyond running. We hit it like going speed of sound. But
that's right.
But he pulled it all together.
Because I recall when we did, when we decorated the art gallery, you know, Amanda did the interiors and she left. She didn't know what we were doing. I said, "Oh my God, the art gallery
it opens. It opens in 1 hour." And
we gotta go. And by the time she came back,
It was awesome.
Transformation.
It was.
And I think Gretel was overwhelmed by that incredible performance of collegiality.
Yes, because we had at the opening of the art gallery, we not only had the Rake and Scrape Band, but we also had Peanuts Taylor performing. Yes. And because Peanuts was there, we thought, hey, conga's really big in Cuba. Let's go find a conga band. So we went out and we found a conga band, and they were all playing together. They were all jamming. It was great. Yeah.
Wow.
That, and the whole community was there.
Oh, that's such a shame because I think that's, in a way, for me, that's what those festivals are, right? Those festivals are about... Because what for me was so fascinating when I watched then I actually participated in the first Rush Out, as you did, Tony, for like 4.5 hours or whatever. And then the second one was really serious, so we couldn't join that one. So I sat in the main square and I watched most of that. And it was really interesting to see how these same instruments, you know, the bell, some people bang on like cans, but I mean, all the bells and drums, and how there's this similarity, but then also how it becomes different in each culture. Yeah. I think that's what's so interesting about these festivals is you're like, you understand there's a difference, but you then also see these commonalities.
Right.
And I think it really makes you, you know, really brings that home that, yeah, you know what? We all came on a boat at some point. Yeah. And some of us came from the same place, but ended up on different islands or ended up being separated in different ways. And you really get this sense of community. Mm-hmm.
But then you have the whole Cuban intellectual movement that, you know, begins with somebody like Jose Martí that talks about Nuestra America and then morphs into Benítez Rojo, who's talking about the repeating island of music and rhythms and polyrhythms that really, I think that captures it right there, mm-hmm. because he's saying something about the repetition of culture that is always similar but different,
mm-hmm.
and the repetition of people across the region, across the Americas, mm-hmm. and up into the United States because of movement, because New Orleans is a Caribbean city, because Miami is a Caribbean
city. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I always try to explain to people when they're like, what's it like in the Caribbean? And all the islands are the same. And I say, it's kind of like this big dysfunctional family, right? And we've all suffered from the same dysfunction. So, you know, like we have the same parents, basically, or grandparents, you know, who were this colonial and slavery. But we've all somehow come out of that with different psychoses. You know, mm-hmm. so like if you have a family, one kid will act this way and one kid will act, and it's all the result of the same thing, but because of your personality, you somehow act out in a different way. Right. And I feel like the Caribbean is a bit like that. Like we all have this common root and somehow we've all gone in different directions, or, you know, whether the colonizer was French, English, or Spanish, of course, that's imprinted a lot on the culture. But at the end of the day, I come back to this idea of roots and that we really share the same roots.
And I'll tell you another thing about this model that I feel the government should really give this serious consideration. It's far cheaper to put a festival on like this.
Yeah.
Than it would be, say, the carnival that we attempted.
Sure.
You know, this, everybody brings who they are to us, to perform for us.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's far cheaper to do it, but it's, in my opinion, far more successful.
Yeah.
You will see your success in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
For real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Because we're not paying for them to come here.
Correct.
They're paying for them to come here.
Correct.
They get hotel beds. They get different performances. That's something we really need to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And the intellectual part is there. I mean, the Bahamas is incredibly wealthy with intellectual capital.
And I know we've only got 2 minutes now, Tony, but do you feel from the intellectual standpoint, did you make enough connect? Do you feel like it was all the stress of value to you and your team?
The intellectual part was terrific for our part. Our presentations were great. I think that was sadly under-recognized by the entire delegation and the larger organization. But it was very well received. I mean, that part, it's like you make a small ripple here and it has another effect somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So
right.
We don't know where that'll go, because there were mm-hmm. people from all over the Caribbean. There were Trinis, there were Bajans, there were people from Colombia,
America.
But
yeah.
this was just yeah. in the literary right, section. Right. So, yeah. And, you know, because it's so international, I knew a lot of the people from other conferences mm-hmm. and other areas, and that made it stronger. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think it was something that the Bahamas could develop.
Yeah. Well, my dad would love to do it. My dad, he quite often goes to this annual festival in San Miguel de Allende, and which is a literary one. And he said, you know, why can't we do that in the Bahamas? So I think we all saw like a lot of potential and ideas. Unfortunately, this always happens. We get into the good, we want to keep talking another hour when there's 40 seconds left. So I have to thank you both for being here this evening. Linda Stubbs, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, otherwise known as Tony, thank you very much for joining.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You have been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery. And you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that on July 30th, we're going to have the first in our series of talks in coordination with the Rum Bahamas Festival. It will be food and history. You will be getting food there. It's $15 a ticket. You can buy them from the National Art Gallery. Patricia Glinton McCullis will be taking us through our history through cuisine. So please join us for that. And once again, thanks for listening. You have been listening to Guardian Talk Radio. Good evening.